Hello, and welcome to Colors of the Dark. I'm your co-host, Rebecca McKendry, and with me is Elric Kane. What you up to today?
Like was just talking to Ernie behind the scenes, just trying to stay cool, trying to stay out of this brutal, ridiculous heat wave that LA's been having.
Yeah, I kind of love it though. Having rolled
Oh,
back from
no.
like negative 30 Canadian weather, coming back to it being 80, it was kind of like, yeah, this is what I needed.
Oh, if it was 80, don't get me wrong, but it was 96 some of the days, and I'm like in, what was it, late February, early March? It's like inhuman. This is a
Yeah,
problem, but
it's wonderful.
okay. Well, if you have air conditioning, I guess you better. I don't in the room we record, so it's always like saps my will once you get in there. But otherwise, doing all right. You know what I did? I watched. I caught up really late yesterday to Scream 7 after what we're talking about.
Okay. So jump in with some Screen 7
Yeah,
here.
I'll just. I'm not going to go deep, obviously, because the kind of movie it is. In case people it hasn't come to streaming quite yet, but I did not hate this movie, and I say that like that sounds like a backhanded compliment, but everyone I follow
Was
as
dissing on
it has been
it.
completely roasted, and I gotta say, and I also wasn't interested in seeing it largely because I just wasn't that interested in seeing Kevin Williamson directing wise. And I will say that was like one of the better things about it. It's like this as a slasher, the slasher scenes I thought were really effective. And I thought the first 30 or so minutes, I was like quite into it. Like I was like, wow, I'm really quite invested. Had a fun cold open. But then after that, where it goes wrong a bit, and I don't, because my expectations are different than other people with these movies, I really expect nothing when I go to a new Scream movie. And it's not just a slight on them, but you're this many deep with this many kind of reinventions, and it's just like I've only ever loved one, and that's the first one. So I don't, and I like them, I don't dislike them, but it was just, and when they start doing a lot of callbacks to the previous films here and there, you know, maybe too many of those for my liking, and maybe that's more for the crowd. But it did feel more in line with the Wes Craven Scream movies than the modern
Oh.
two. And the modern two are really fun because they're doing something different. That's why I appreciate those two films. But I actually kind of liked, and I thought Nev was actually very strong, and I thought she really suited still being this character. And I don't always feel that way with these legacy 20 year later type sequels. Often it doesn't feel like the same person. She feels like the same person. Her daughter, I thought, was good. You know, a lot of the side things are ridiculous. There's a piece of casting that people like us would watch that would maybe tip its hat a bit more than for your a layman, like someone who doesn't watch a lot of particular kind of movies might not be a problem, but for me and you it would be like 1 second and you kind of will have a sense of part of the ending, not the ending, not the whole thing. But no, I kind of had f I had fun watching it, and I think I can't say I love it or anything. It's, you know, but I don't think it's the worst of all of them, to be honest. I think
Wow.
I'd still put it probably above maybe three or four. I'm not sure. I lose track of where some of those, but I did think that it just reminded me a bit more of the feeling of some of the original ones. That will not be a popular opinion because I have not seen anyone really say that, but I do think Kevin Williamson actually did a pretty good job directing it, and it had some fun. It had her husband in the, you know, in the present, you know, 20 years later, is played by Joel McHale, and he was fun to have
I
Joel
love
McHale.
Joel McHale.
Yeah, he
Okay.
was fun. But there is, you know, again, it's nothing new, but I think people put a weird importance where I think of these more like another Friday 13th movie has come out. So you don't need to do much for me to be entertained. And that's all I'm expecting. I am not expecting the event of the year movie because I think the mask for me wore off. I think in this case, because of the Scary Movies. I think back in the day, I
Okay.
started to lose quite a lot of interest in the mask and the creep. The first one was genuinely scary, like, whoa, surprising, shocking. And then pretty soon after two, I just remember personally being a little less invested because I think as soon as you're spoofing it at the same time as you're releasing these movies, for me, that might have weakened it a lot. So even in this one, when the least interesting in a way is the actual Ghostface part, but the actual action of the kills, there was one jump. I'll say there was a jump in a bar scene that I just kind of, you know, leaned forward for a second, which I was surprised by. So it's not a complete rave, and I do miss, you know, some of the characters who were cut from this, you know, for all the behind the scenes political reasons that were happening. I would have liked to have seen their storylines, you know, continued, and maybe there could be another version of one of these movies would like that, and so that's a bit of a shame. But as a standalone, I thought it was like very watchable. So, you know,
Wow.
it
Okay.
might have helped that I didn't go opening night with expectation. Like I waited a couple weeks, everyone's shitting on it. I'm just here to say, as somebody who enjoys watching a slasher film in almost any environment, I was still entertained, so.
Okay. Well, it sounds like I need to catch up on Scream 7 then, because I was being all judgy judge, and now I need to circle back to it. But you know what I did check out was the sequel to Ready or Not, which is Ready or Not 2, Here I Come, because I loved the first one. And I gotta say, again, I was being kind of judgy because I really approached this with kind of a really can't we just let that one exist as a good movie? And really kind of like, you know, figuring that they were going to have to like totally wedge a sequel in, because when you literally blow up your entire cast at the end of the first one, like, how do you keep going? And I gotta say, they did it pretty cleverly. I was pretty impressed with this. It was not as fun as the first movie for me, just because I knew where it was headed and I knew exactly what to expect. But that said, this was still really fucking fun. It picks up right after the first one. So it picks up, she's on the steps, she's smoking, the entire family has just exploded. Sorry, spoiler if you have not seen the first one yet. But it picks up with the cops picking her up. She wakes up in a hospital and she's being questioned if she killed the whole family. And specifically, they have called her emergency contact, which we find out is her estranged sister, played by Catherine Newton. And they hate each other, but she was still listed as her emergency contact. And what we quickly find out is that the Laddomas family was actually part of this larger satanic syndicate that includes all of the most powerful families in the world. And now that she has killed the, or not killed, that the Laddomases have exploded by satanic law, all of these other powerful families must come together and compete to see who gets to become the overlords of this satanic sect. And they compete by trying to kill her before sunrise. So thus, everything reboots. She is placed into it's Sarah Michelle Gellar, who is one of the powerful family's daughter. They're placed into her hotel. It's kind of like a resort area. They clear the resort, they plop her in the middle of it, and then all the families gather, get weapons, and they have till sunrise to kill her. Part of the most fun part of this one is Elijah Wood, who plays Satan's lawyer. And so he shows up with this giant book of rules. And so the entire way through, he's like, no, cannot use that weapon. And it's just his continuous amount of like legal jargon that he's putting forth on the rules of this game. It's
They
still
should have had
super
him peeling
bloody.
an
There's
egg.
lots of,
That would have been
right?
really cool if he was just
That's
peeling an egg with his fingernail at the starter, say.
the whole time. No, and it definitely it's the most fun role in this. Like, I know, you know, Catherine Newton did great, but Elijah was who I walked away saying, like, oh my God, I just loved him in this. And he's literally standing behind a podium with a book the whole time, but he does it so personably that it's just like such a fun lawyer role. It does build out the mythology a ton, which is always kind of scary for me in a horror film, because it's what we were talking about with the strangers. Like, the strangers are fun and scary until you write a book about their backstory and the mythology. This one's a lot of mythology, but I really kind of enjoyed it because it did cleverly build on and not just take the satanic pact to this one family, but make it something that's much larger, involving like eight different families from all around the globe. So I gotta say, it missed kind of the holy shit, I don't know what to expect that I had with the first one. It was still a really good time. It was fun. So,
Yeah, that's the thing
Ready
about
or
the first
Not
one.
Two.
Yeah, such a surprise with some of those twists in that one. When I saw the trailer, this why I didn't go yet is just every trailer I saw, like four in a row, they were all for movies about people being hunted and chased and funny and kind of darkly comic, and they just literally looked like one movie, like multiple trailers in a row. And I was like, wow, when did this become the norm? For
There's
usually that would be surprising, but no.
another one coming out this weekend that I actually really want to see, because I want to see what they do with it, but looks very similar, called They Will Kill You.
Yep, no,
And
that's one of the trailers I saw, and I was just like, Jesus Christ, it looked exactly the
it's about a
same.
girl who is hired as, I'm guessing, some type of maid in a really fancy hotel or apartment building. And we find out that she's being hunted by the rich. And it always is that kind of scenario of the rich eating the poor or feasting off the poor. But yeah, I'm willing to go see it just because it looked hyper violent.
Well,
So
see
I'll go see it for fun.
what doesn't interest me about them, I've got to say, and it doesn't mean I wouldn't enjoy them, because I probably would, but what doesn't get me excited about, and the this was the case for the three or four trailers I saw, because another one had Samara Weaving and Jason Segel at a cabin that's coming out soon over her dead body, and I've heard that's great, but like again, it was a similar kind of thing. But what I was taking issue with is they're all basically action movies. Like ultimately, when it comes down to it, they're not about scaring you or thrills or tension. They're about like heightened situation and then crazy kills and violence. And I'm like, yeah, that's just never been that interesting to me with horror films. And so I would rather see that same scenario with the hotel Wicker Man style and get freaked out. That's what I want to watch personally.
I will say
But
this one does have a lot of kind of satanic cult action to it, far more than the first one. The first one was very straight action. This one definitely gets a lot more into the satanic cult elements of it.
But it was a great segue because you realize they were the guys who would have been doing Scream 7.
I do.
Instead, they were doing this. And I must say, because I also like Ready or Not, but I still think my favorite thing by them is Abigail. I think Abigail was a very
So
underrated
fun.
movie, a movie that just needed a different ad campaign to help hide it. And it would have, but the movie itself is really good. So, okay, my favorite thing, I've seen a lot this week, like way more than normal. I don't know how that happened given how busy I was for the other show. But something that I have to recommend, it's not from this year, but man, it ticked all the things I've been looking for. When I watched The Snowman, police officer, hello, Mr. Policeman, which does not work at all, but based on this amazing Joe Nesbo book, the feeling I wanted was the Scandi noir serial killer thriller from like a lot of the movies me and you have been discussing the last few couple of years on Deep Cuts. I found the TV show version, 6 episodes. Like, I would call it almost perfect for that feeling. It's from Denmark. It's been on Netflix, I guess, for a couple of years. It's called The Chestnut Man. And
What?
I only stumbled on it because somebody had posted about the book being so good, like one of the best of its type, that they were then going to watch the show. So then I went to Netflix a few days ago, stumbled upon it. And man, from episode one, I was like, okay, this is exactly what I wanted the tone of The Snowman to be. It is 6 episodes, and there's going to be a new season, but different storyline coming in about a month, which so I'm very excited to have just discovered this. I watched all of it straight away, like in two sittings, because it was so good. It's basically 20, it starts 20 years ago in the 80s in Denmark somewhere. And make sure you watch it in the correct language. Don't watch this with the English because it just really works. A guy, a cop who usually has nothing going on in his town, shows up to this farm, not thinking it's going to be anything serious, and goes in, and this family, the wife is dead, cut up and bled to death in a bathtub. One of the a man is dead, and then two kids are in a basement, like, and you don't know what level of abuse has gone down, but all you see is this little chestnut man, which is somebody takes chestnuts and then uses all the pieces of the chestnut to make like a little figurine out of it with the chestnut head. And I think it's like a thing they do in that country, just like, you sometimes would sell them on a road stop or something, but there's hundreds of them in this house, and it's
Oh.
really, really creepy. Anyway, then it cuts to 20 years later, and there's a political figure who's running for a political re-election, and her daughter has been missing for a year. And then there's this crazy murder where a mother is hung upside down from her feet with her hand cut off and killed. And they find this body, and there's a little chestnut man there. And so basically, her this main woman who's a mom, a single mom, who's struggling to keep her, kind of relationship going with her daughter, and this new arrival cop, who's a bit mentally off, have to work together, and they start piecing together that something from that 20-year-old crime has some impact on this, and they're putting the pieces. There's a lot of different threads and story, but it's treated completely like realistically. It's thrilling. It's kind of surprising, like who the thing's gonna be, and it's just exactly the vibe I wanted from a Scandi noir serial killer thing. So highest of recommend, one of the best TV things I've seen in a long time. So I was so into it. So highest rec. The Chestnut Man, you can all watch it on Netflix. And like I said, I'm going to have another season about to come out. So, kind of a fun discovery.
Which was next, my next question. There's only 6 episodes on Netflix right now. Do you
And it's a
find
whole
out
story. Yeah,
who
whole
the
story.
killer is?
Yeah,
Okay, so
this
it's
is
like
one
an,
story. Yeah.
okay,
My
got it.
guess is this did well and they decided to have a second. The only thing that makes me nervous about a second is if they continue the Chestnut Man of it, because that storyline is complete, and I would hate for them to just, as a gimmick, have us somebody copycatting or something. So I'm hoping it's just the two cops are solving a new case because they're very good together. But it's just like crazy because I see so much of the shit, and so often it misses the mark of that feeling you're looking for. This is exactly that, like 90s, but like, you know, everything's treated fairly matter-of-factly, and yet it's still thrilling and dark, like very dark and grisly. So yeah, you'll watch one tonight and you'll be like in. There's no
I'm
question.
gonna watch it as soon as we're
Yeah.
done here because you just hit like all my sweet
Yeah.
spots with that.
Very
I
entertaining.
gotta say, I really love TV series that aren't afraid to kind of just do six episodes and then say, let's do something else next season. Because they just announced that AMC has a new season of The Terror coming. And I loved all the seasons of that so far. Like, I am so in. They've done two. I think this is the
Two.
third.
I saw the snow one. I never saw one set in Japan.
That one was great. I
Yeah, I never saw
really
that.
liked that one. The snow one and the Japanese one was good. You know, it's, you know,
I think I
sometimes.
might be wrong, but I think Ridley Scott has something to do with this new one. I think he might even have directed some of this new one.
Ooh, or
If I
like
saw
True
that.
Detective. Like, I just love the idea of let's just make eight really strong episodes and then we're out.
Well, to be
And
honest, I timed this out. It actually, six episodes is actually about the length. If you're adapting like a 350-page novel, that's about the perfect amount if you're doing a faithful. So to me, it makes sense. Six episodes would be probably a book if you had True Detective, the novel, you know what I mean?
wow.
Versus 10 or something, or 12, which is more traditional television. But that's like making it a bit thin in a way, you know? So yeah, no, I'm with you. I think it's a good length.
Okay, I'm gonna take us to a reboot that is not really a reboot as much as an acknowledgement of the original, but kind of a reboot. Let's go to Anaconda.
Oh, you saw
This
it. Okay.
one, I did. I
I'm
saw it with the
curious.
kids.
All right.
I was totally curious too. You know, it was one of those, this came to theaters in December. And immediately I was like, wait, Jack Black and Paul Rudd rebooted Anaconda? It looks like a comedy. And that's kind of part of the setup. And it came out right before Christmas, and I never got a chance to go to the theaters to see it over the holidays. And then I was off in Canada. And so as soon as I got back, I was like, okay, kids, it's on streaming now. So let's watch this. And it's never meant to be a horror film. Like, they know exactly what they're doing. And this is a comedy with a lot of kind of acknowledgement of horror tropes. And it really does get deep into kind of the Anaconda lore. Like, it expects you to have seen the first two movies. And I will say, J-Lo and Ice Cube do make appearances, like clever ones at
Yeah.
that. So it's a comedy, but there was something really clever behind the presentation of it. It's directed by Tom Gormican, who did Ghosted, which is a TV show with Adam Scott that was on Hulu that I absolutely loved, a horror comedy TV show. But then he also did The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent, that Nick
I
Cage
love
one from
that
a couple of
movie.
years ago. Yeah, great movie. So he's very competent in what he's doing and knows exactly what he's going for. The whole concept of it is that Jack Black, Paul Rudd, and Steve Zane were all childhood best friends who used to make movies together. And they're now all adults and hate their lives. Jack Black makes wedding videos. Paul Rudd is a failing actor who is mostly like a background actor and can't get any jobs that'll help pay like his rent. And then Steve Zahn has like alcohol abuse problems. And so they all three kind of acquaint themselves with each other. And that's when Paul Rudd is like, I have the rights to remake Anaconda. Let's just all quit our jobs and go fucking do this. So the three of them gather up a couple more childhood friends and take off to the Amazon. They hire a boat driver and they pay them to drive them down the Amazon with the intention of remaking Anaconda, just the like five of them. And so it's very American movie, the way that they're going at it. And they're so determined and the passion, like it's just so fun in that capacity because there is so much earnestness to what they're doing and believing that they're making the best thing ever and that this is what's gonna, that they've always wanted to do. And of course, they encounter real anacondas and Amazonian crime lords and all types of chaos along the way. It does have some actually like scary moments with the snakes as it gets moving forward. Some mixed reviews, but I gotta say, this was pretty damn fun for someone who loves the act of movie making, loves making movies with their friend, and really likes the Anaconda movies. Like, I was kind of like, this hit a lot of really good spots for me. So it's not always perfect, but I had a really good time with it because it was just all about that passion of movie making and the film Anaconda. It was like a love letter to the film Anaconda.
If you sit at Pam's coffee shop right next to the Vista, like I did last week, and I was just sitting there for a few minutes, and I look out the window, and oh, there's Jack Black just hanging on the corner. I think that's his neighborhood, so he's
Just
outside
hanging
there.
on the corner.
He was just literally hanging outside the window. I was like, yeah, it's Jack Black. I got to watch the Anaconda movie.
Oh my God, my
So,
kids would have lost it. There's very
yeah.
few people that they view as like celebrities who aren't YouTubers. We'll run into YouTubers at the grocery store and then they're like, oh my God, do you know who that was? And I'm like, no, not at all. But they
Yeah.
do recognize Jack Black.
Yeah, no,
So
that's pretty good. I know I actually probably will watch this one on streaming just because
it was
it'll
fun.
probably be fun. And I do like the first Anaconda. I don't know if I ever saw the second Anaconda.
You
I wouldn't
know,
thought so.
I like the second Anaconda.
Is
It
that
is
Bloodstone
directed,
or something?
yeah.
Anaconda. Okay.
It's Anaconda Bloodstone. It's directed by Dwight Little, I
Oh,
want
yeah.
to say,
Okay. I know him, yeah.
who did like Friday 4 and a number of other horror films.
Well, no,
It's not.
he did Halloween 4.
Oh, thank you.
Because
Okay,
Friday is,
yes.
of course, the great
Oh,
Josito.
thank you. That is Josito. Thank
It's
you.
our
Sorry,
man.
my
Yeah.
brain, my
Yeah.
brain. No, so I knew he had done part 4 of something. So yes, Dwight Little. And I'm fairly sure, without having Google it, I'll do it as soon as I stop talking, that he did the Blood Diamond one. And I gotta say, I enjoy it. It's kind of like Medicine Man, where they're going in
Yeah.
to try to find this particular flower that they know stops cancer. So it's got like Medicine Man vibes, but this particular flower is only in this like giant pit where all of these like oversized anacondas mate. And they're oversized anacondas because they're all covered in this flower and it doesn't like they don't die. So they just keep growing and like the flower keeps them from dying, but it also reverses aging and stops cancer and all this stuff. So yeah, it's a fun little like Medicine Man with snakes. I enjoyed it. Some people thought it was over digitized at the time, but everything was. So Anaconda's Blood Orchid, still worth it.
The
Or
one that
blood, yeah, Blood Orchid. That's it. Oh, because it's an orchid that they're going after.
from that same era, we saw it at the New Biff, one of these all night things they did, but it was called Komodo, and that was in the same type of filmmaking as Anaconda, and it was so good. And it was like one that kind of got lost in the shuffle, to DVD and stuff. But it's that kind of same effects, and it's an island full of Komodo dragons that have gone loose, and a team have to evacuate, and a kid who was staying there is stuck there in peril, and it's really fun. But it has exactly the same kind of feeling as the first Anaconda. So I feel like a lot of people still have never seen Komodo. That's the deep cut.
Komodo. Ooh, that's a good
Komodo.
one. I
Yeah.
have not seen Komodo.
Get into the Komodo. Okay, a couple little ones. One that I didn't see at the very end of last year, that I just had missed. And then I saw a couple people really highly rate it, and it was called Hollow Road. Did you hear about this one?
I have it on my watch list. I heard about this from a few people as well.
Yeah, so it didn't grab me at the time. But so this is directed, I didn't realize who directed it. So it's Baba Kanwari. As soon as I saw that, I was like, oh, okay, Wounds Under the Shadow, both really interesting movies. And it is a completely contained, that movie Lock, where the guy's in the back of the car, in the car the whole movie?
I deeply liked that movie,
Lock's a great
yes.
movie. So it's if somebody likes that, that's kind of what this is. A totally contained, very simple, minimal, but two great actors, Rosamund Pike and Matthew Rhys. That at the start, it is two parents who the dad has had a fight with his daughter before the movie opens, and she's gone off. They don't know, she went off in a storm. She's had some issues with legal stuff at times. And they're kind of the couple are kind of fighting over it. You don't really know the context. You're kind of just dropping in the middle. And then their phone rings, and it's their daughter, and she's freaking out. She took some back road in the middle of nowhere, and she thinks she's hit somebody, and she thinks they're dead. And she's like freaking out, and they're telling her, like, don't move the body, don't touch it, don't do, they're trying to control the situation while one of them's on the phone, as it's very much a parental kind of nightmare. And then they jump in the car, and the whole movie is them in the car on their way to go to her. And so it's them having conversations with her. And all I'll give you at the end is that, because I did not know where, I just thought, okay, this is just a kind of a drama, heightened drama. And as it goes, they're freaking out. One of the dad's like, I think you do need to move the body, and you need to get out of there because you have a prior drunk driving. She might be high as well. They're concerned about that. And then you hear a voice in the background, and this neighbor woman talking to their daughter, and she's acting really nice, but then there's something more sinister starts to happen, and there's even hints that there might be a supernatural element to the story, and it gets so by the end I was like, it's missing at the very, very end. It was like missing that one last hurrah to make it like what I would call almost a great movie, where I was like, whoa, and it was just kind of just ends at the end, but it's still really good, and it's really well acted and tight, you know? So if you like those types of movies, I definitely recommend Hollow Road.
Hollow Road.
And that's
Okay.
with an A, not a hollow, like Hollow Road. Yeah,
Is this streaming somewhere now? Because I had it on my Amazon
it's
list. I
definitely on
think it's
Amazon. I
still.
don't know if it's free or if it costs money, but it's been out for a while, so that's where I watched it, I believe. But I think I really like Wounds. The more I think about
I
Wounds,
love
and Under
Wounds.
the
Oh my
Shadows,
God.
amazing. Like
I wish that guy didn't get canceled because I can't recommend that movie to people now because I'm like, okay, remember the guy that was like kind of a cannibal?
Yeah, just
Yeah,
makes it scarier.
yeah, but that movie was so well done, and I
Unnerving.
love, I love Nathan Vallengroed to begin with, like his novels. I just love how kind of cosmic and otherworldly they are, but much in a very Lovecraftian manner. It's really hard to read his stuff and immediately imagine like what it's going to be like to watch a video and then have wounds that you can like these black holes. And that movie just encapsulates it so well.
Yeah, no, it's a nice surprise. It's one I'm due for a rewatch, but I definitely liked it when it came out. So yeah, Hollow Road, give it a look, because I was glad to catch up to that one.
Okay, well, I'm going to get weird here.
Good.
Okay. So we got a screening link for Mermaid right as it is opening at South by Southwest. And I had seen a trailer for this and was intrigued. It looked fun and weird, but did not realize that this is the director from Butt Boy named Tyler Cornack.
That means it's going
And
to get weird.
it means it's going to get real weird. So if you were ever watching Butt Boy, questioning what is this director going to do next? Remake Splash might not have been your first guess, but guess what he did? This movie is pretty much Splash, but as channeled through the Butt Boy director. And it was a treat, I gotta say. Like, I can't call it full horror the entire time. It definitely goes there towards the end. But it definitely tracks adjacent enough in just a weird cult sense that Butt Boy was not for me. I'm going to be the first to say that. That movie, I watched it and I said, huh, like, I'm glad that somebody can make stuff like this. It was not for me.
You know who it
This.
was for? I watched that movie. I've never gotten a recommendation like better in my whole life, where I watched that movie, Butt Boy, and I liked it, but it wasn't from totally my bag. And then I just called one friend and said, "Hey, Josh Forbes, you know what movie you're gonna really like?" And then I remember him watching it and going, "This is the greatest thing I've ever seen." I was like, "I knew that would land."
That tracks. Oh my gosh, that
Totally
tracks.
tracked, yeah.
This one I really liked. And that's definitely not something if you told me Butt Boy was going to remake Splash and I would love the movie. But I really did enjoy this. It is about it starts with kind of the Florida man mythos. And the movie opens with a screen where it says, "This movie is a love letter to Florida." And it says that right at the top of the movie, and nothing could be more true. This whole movie is a love letter to Florida. So it starts with a Florida man who, in this, is being played by Johnny Pemberton, who I know him from Superstore because he played kind of the very confused young rapper boyfriend. He's also in this cartoon that my kids love called Pickle and Peanut, and I think he's amazing in that too. But you'll recognize him as soon as you see the movie. But Johnny Pemberton, and he is playing a drug addicted Florida man who the only things that he really likes to do is he loves fish and he likes writing poetry. And so his main job is he cleans fish aquariums at this strip club. And the strip club behind the strippers, it's got all of these amazing fish tanks. And that's the opening scene as you're watching all of these strippers by way of these incredible fish tanks. And he writes a poem to one of the strippers and gets fired. And so now he's completely down on his luck, but he's still taking a lot of like Percocet. And he finds a mermaid who's been wounded and is floating in the ocean. And he decides that he is going to take her back to his apartment. It's not even his apartment. His dad passed away. So it's his dad's old place. And he puts her in his bathtub and starts trying to nurse her back to health. So it's either a really fucked up version of Splash or like a slightly less fucked up version of Mermaid in a Manhole, depending on kind of where your range falls. And she looks absolutely amazing. Like the mermaid effects that they did are ridiculous. She is not an attractive mermaid. This is not going to be like a Daryl Hannah mermaid. She literally looks like a fish with boobs and also capable of spitting this like black squid ink that she vomits anytime she gets kind of scared. Eats any type of meat, super fanged. It's really going into that like siren mythos where you get that she is totally like ready to eat his face, that they would eat humans. But he is very careful to keep kind of her tied up and keep his distance. But this world, now that he's got this mermaid in his bathtub who he is falling in love with, it is a world of strip clubs. It's a world of drugs. It is all the Florida trashiness. He's involved in all of these different kind of drug dealer crime lords who eventually find out that he has a mermaid and then try to exploit that. And so the mermaid looks absolutely amazing. It's dark comedy weirdness with a lot of horror notes as it proceeds, as she starts kind of trying to break away from him and he starts fighting against all the forces that are trying to get her. And then it gets really hard. But for the most part, this is just fucking weird fun. And I really ended up liking this way more than I was expecting to. This just played South by Southwest, so it's not going to be available for a while, I suspect, but it was just a blast. Mermaid, by Tyler Cornack.
I'm surprised you can call it mermaid. Don't you have to put a spin on it? There's so many movies. You feel like you need like Florida Mermaid or something.
I feel like this should have been called Florida Man at some point because it reads like a newspaper headline. But at the same time, Mermaid tracks well with it. So
Okay. Well, I'm going to do them out of order. I had something that wouldn't fit, but the perfect follow-up to that is equally weird sexual cross-species sex. Movie is the brand new movie from Yellow Veil and Rustic hitting some theaters. I think it's road showing across America over the next couple weeks, and it is called Touch Me, directed by Addison Hyman. And it's a movie, you'll understand this, no one else will. This is very vague, but it had some imagery in it that when I had seen a poster like a year ago, I was like really worried because I thought it was going to be very close in tone to the thing I was hoping to make next. And I was like, shit, I shouldn't even watch this movie. Turns out this is a way over the top camp, completely comedic, wild, wild movie. So I had nothing to like, it's just a totally different planet of style of filmmaking.
this is the hypochondriac director, right?
Oh, he did. I never saw Hypochondriac, but he
It
did.
was good. It
Yeah,
was
this.
not that, but yeah, it's good.
This is crazy. Like there's some really, the trailer's really fun too. I only watched the start of the trailer, but Olivia Taylor Dudley is in therapy at the start, going through talking to her doctor, and she, in quote mark, makes up a story about having met a guy who she got into a sexual relationship with and realized he was an alien, and then had to get away because the sex got so crazy and she thought she was going to die, kind of thing. And then we and that she left that relationship by moving in with her, this gay friend of hers, who is just like a guy who's always at the end of his rope and needs affirmations all around him, and he's just a bit of a hot mess. Really great dynamic between these two characters, like her and this roommate, Jordan, played by Jordan Harris. Really funny. Like they're just funny friends. It's a funny friend kind of slacker kind of movie at the start where they're just doing nothing, sitting around all day on Instagram. That's all they do. And then she goes to a coffee shop, and behind her, she had talked about how this alien that she had to escape always wore tracksuits, like the Kill Bill kind of tracksuits, different colors every day. And of course, right behind her, you see the tracksuit, and you're like, uh-oh, she's running into it. Turns around, and it's Lou Taylor Pucci, who is really one of my favorite actors. I just saying about him, I find
He's
very
so
amusing.
fun. He is
Yes.
just a fun actor.
And he's obviously in another Rustic film, being Spring, and he's just great. The Evil Dead remake, he's fantastic. Anyway, he's got long hair and looks like Jesus, and a big beard, and it's obviously very purposeful. And he's really funny in this. It's really over the top. Like he is playing this guy on the outside, but an actual alien. And he touches her, and if he touches her face, it takes away all her anxiety. So basically, it's about this character who is like gets addicted to this heroin-like touch of hers that makes her just feel at ease because she's had a fucked up childhood. And he invites her out to his complex with just him and his assistant, and so she drags along her friend, and of course they get out there and they both want to fuck him, and so it becomes about him seducing both of them separately, and when they do have sex, it becomes like I think a lot of early on I was like, oh, is this gonna be like position or something? But it's not. It's much more like Japanese hentai porn, and it goes all the way. So crazy octopus tentacles flying up in the air, yeah, but it's comedic and weird colors. And of course now they're both into him, and he says that he's there and he's a peaceful alien, that he has these seeds that will plant trees that will save the world. But of course, you know, there's something more to it. I won't say any more. It becomes a bit of a, how are they gonna, who's gonna get him? How is this gonna resolve itself? And it gets a lot darker, a lot of goopy practical effects, some crazy deaths. It's a really, really fun movie. Like one of the most fun things. It definitely in my top couple so far this year of just having fun. It won't be for everyone because it's like the comedy is definitely a flavor, you know, but I totally appreciated it. So that's touched me. So not streaming yet, but playing in some theatrical first.
Oh, so this one's possession-y, it looks like, but with a campiness to it.
Yeah, but not
And
really. That's what I thought it was going to be. I think it's not possession. That's the thing. That's what I was worried about, that it was going to be that. It's really not. It's much more of a crazy hentai alien kind of fuck comedy. You know, it's pure
fuck
comedy.
comedy.
I mean, it's really comedic. It's Luke Taylor's very, very funny in this role. So, but it is still horror film. So that's Touch Me. Definitely the one I enjoyed the most. Very fun, playful, wild kind of comedy. You'll know. Maybe watch the trailer. You'll know if it's for you. You'll like it. You will definitely like it. You'll get a
I
kick
was
out of
gonna
it.
say this looks exactly like my jam, so I'm kind of into this. But okay, so the only last one I've got is a book, and I believe that you have a couple more movies, correct?
Yeah, I have a couple I can run through. One I didn't care for, but I'll mention it. It's a brand new one called Do Not Enter. And the reason I watched this with our buddy Dick Grunert, he had read, it's by the novelist of the original Rambo book, which is David Morrell, classic kind of book. And he said this is a really great, exciting book. And I was like, okay, but it sat on the shelf for a long time. And it just came out. And it's crazy because listen to the setup. There's a group of young people who make urban exploration videos slash debunking myths and live stream it on the internet, and that's what they do. And now they've got a chance to go into a big hotel to do it, to disprove a major haunting. Does that sound like a movie you've made? Because it
That
sounds a
does.
lot like a movie you've made. So I was
It's
watching it like
honestly, it's a story that gets told over and
yeah.
over. I wasn't the first
No,
either.
I
It's
know,
like,
but
it's a basic Reddit thread is like kids making videos find something.
Yeah. But anyway, I was just watching the first 10 minutes going, wait a minute, I feel like the setup is familiar. And it's just, and I kept, it was pretty funny. It was one of those screenings where every 5 minutes I turned to Dick and went, was that on the book? And he's just like, no. Because I
Yeah.
knew that there's not going to be YouTubers, you know, live streaming. I knew that's not going to be in some book by the guy who wrote Rambo. And of course, they've tried to make this modern. And it felt like a movie made by notes. Like multiple execs' notes have been put into a movie and then totally transformed the story, unfortunately. But this group, there's this New Jersey famous abandoned Paragon Hotel, which has been closed down because of mobsters and stories like that, but there's meant to be $300 million hidden somewhere in the walls. So this group of YouTubers get together. They're going to break in. They're going to live stream it. As they're breaking in, they run into some guy who looks like a cop. He says he's actually with Vice, the Vice, you know, journalism, and wants to go along with them to prove their story. They let him go with them. Meanwhile, also a gang that has wronged them also ends up breaking in and following. It's a little too much, too many characters. Anyway, they get in there. There's some genuinely good stuff. Like it's well made, for the most part. It's really well shot. Looks good. Big sets, like massive. So it feels like a big movie. They get in there, and this is where the book starts to kick in, where I'm like, oh, I can see the hook. They start looking around this place, and at some point we see a creature, kind of like the big Prometheus, kind of tall, skinny, bald, no hair on it, white kind of creature, and it's kind of picking them off through different spaces of this hotel. And then we learn there's also a satanic element to how this thing existed in this hotel. And so it's got some cool elements that are just completely underdone with like really poor characters and kind of just silly, you know, modernization stuff that just doesn't work. If you just set this in the 80s, it would have been probably been a more fun movie and just gotten rid of all that kind of modern thing. But it's kind of interesting. Again, it's for such a, it looks like a fairly big production. I had heard nothing about this. Like I did not
What
know
is
this
the name of
existed.
it again?
It's the other problem being kind of generic. Do not enter. So,
Okay, and what is the name of the book it's based off of?
oh, I don't know, but his name's David Morrell. So if you look up
I
David
know, I'm
Morrell.
looking. That was the thing. I was looking through his list right now, and I was like, I don't even see anything similar to this on his list
Well,
of
on
books.
IMDb, if you look him up on,
Yeah.
it'll be the first, it'll be the newest, probably. So that's one way to, yeah, it must be, it probably has a different name. It's not a good name for, I mean, how, I think I had written it down as Do Not Go In, and then I couldn't find it on, online, and I was like, oh, it was Do Not Enter. Again, some people, this will be some people's actual taste in horror. Like, it's not, like, it's, you know, it's got some fun stuff and some good scenes. Feels a bit more like a video game. I think the director hadn't made a film before. It only made music videos, and maybe that's part of the problem I had with it, like, in terms of the blocking. Like, sometimes six or seven people are just standing in a row, and I'm like, yeah, this doesn't work for making a movie. I don't want to see people standing next to each other, you know. But there were some cool horror scenes in it and a couple good moments. It just didn't really have it in the end. So, but interesting and brand new, a brand new release that had just come out. But a couple that I will be very high on, a couple documentaries, two of the best things I've seen this year for sure, from Severin. I'd been waiting to see this since I heard about it, so I was very excited about this one. I just got it on disc. But it's part of we're going to release all of the Andy Milligan cult
Oh,
out there
yeah.
movies. This is the documentary on the li called The Degenerate, The Life and Times of Andy Milligan, based probably largely on the very famous, sold out back in the day book by Jimmy McDonough called The Ghastly One. And I never got to read the book, which I regret now, but it was always, I read an article about it back in the day, and I've only seen one Andy Milligan movie. But the word is that he was always the piece of work, like kind of a nasty guy, kind of a total outsider artist, made movies that were, you could call genuinely like shit, like bad movies, a lot of them from a lot of people, and like lived a crazy life, but he lived and then died of AIDS, and that was kind of like the story that you would hear about Andy Milligan, that, you know, in this, but the
I'd
documentary
always
is.
heard that he was just like a bad guy and he made really like his movies are generally kind of like cruel. Like there's, you know, they're just kind of icky and cruel movies. And yes, I'd always heard that he was not the nicest guy himself either.
Yeah, and it doesn't dispel that, but it also has a lot of people who love him in it, and it's a, you know, a lot of people from the early gay New York filmmaking scene are in it. So he kind of is at the pioneer. He was an actor originally, like as a young guy, like as a 18-year-old, and then he goes into making like street, you know, theater in a very small, and a lot of it was like early gay theater when that was still illegal to even be outwardly gay in New York City. And so that stuff's really interesting where it starts, and then at a certain point, sexploitation movies start going onto the big screen at 42nd Street. So he's like, well, I should make one. And, you know, a producer literally says, just put somebody with tits in it. So he does. And then suddenly it makes some money and they make another one. And then suddenly he's making all these movies for this guy. And then eventually starts making these crazy schlocky horror movies. And he made, you know, the Ghastly Ones, Bloodthirsty Butchers, Guru the Mad Monk, Tortured, The Rats Are Coming, The Werewolves Are Here. That's my favorite title.
The Naked Witch is the only one I've seen.
Yeah, the only one I'd seen is Flesh Pots of 42nd Street, which is a really cool movie, actually. A very, very, almost John Watersy in some ways. But so, you know, really interesting voice. But this documentary does a good balance of people who liked him or at least worked with him. Some people remembered him well. And also sometimes his own voice in this one interview he gave, not on camera, and he sounds pretty curt in that, you know, but it makes him more interesting. And he does have a sad life, and it is and you realize it's pretty painful, but I love these kind of documentaries are my favorite things on filmmakers who are lesser known, who have fallen through the cracks. And so this made me go, okay, I'm going to watch at least a handful of his movies for deep cuts this year now, from these box sets that they're going to be releasing. But just as its own, I would recommend for people who love, you know, horror biopic type things, this is a goodie. So that's The Degenerate, The Life and Times of Andy Milligan, and that's from Severin right now, I believe, or we might have gotten a slightly advanced copy, but I'm pretty sure it's all coming out now. And then the
You
other
know,
one,
I'll say
oh,
real
sorry, yeah.
quick, I'm just reading a little bit on him now, and I'd never heard this before that they're now speculating that he either had bipolar disorder or schizophrenia. Was that addressed in the documentary?
I think one person, yes, a guy, one of his lovers at one point who he shared an apartment with, thinks he was probably bipolar. He never addressed it. No, it makes, when you're watching it, it absolutely looks that way because he has these crazy swings to, and also he was into pretty rough sexual stuff. Like he would go out onto the street to just get fucked, and didn't matter what, who, or what, or how violent it got. So some of the people talking about him, he inflicted a lot of probably pain on himself, you know, that he then would put in his work. But the craziest part is he clearly despised his mother, and they share photos of her, and she seems like kind of a cruel, mean woman. And so all his movies have like a mother figure who's just the most awful. And so all the movies are torturing her. So just these are truly biographical, even though they're horror movies, like kind of filmmaking, because they're so unfiltered by studios, you know.
Wow.
I am curious. I don't know how many I'll get through this year, but I'm definitely going to watch some because, like, I don't do as great with camp, you know, it usually turns me off a bit. So I'm sure some of them might not be my bag. But a couple of them, when I was watching clips, I was like, oh, I'm just curious about it. And he was self-taught too, just bought a camera and started shooting movies. He did not have any training from anyone and nothing professional about his films whatsoever. He just made them. So I always find those people utterly fascinating. So that's The Degenerate. And the other one, which I watched over a couple nights because it's 3 hours. It is only playing on the Criterion Channel, I believe, right now, but it played at Vidiots a while ago, and everyone I know kind of went to it, and it was so interesting. It's called Video Heaven. It is a 3-hour documentary about VHS
Oh
that
my God.
directed by Alex Ross Perry, the well-known independent filmmaker who made the Kid Print short in the new VHS, which makes total sense when you watch this documentary, because Kid Print was a real thing at Blockbusters, where they would film your child for you in case your child ever got lost, and then they would hand you a VHS. So he turned that into a horror thing. Anyway, he edits a 3-hour documentary, and there is no interviews or anything. It is 3 hours of every clip from every movie pretty much ever made, shot in video stores. So any scene that takes place in a video store, it's stitched together, all of them. Not all, like if one movie had tons, it doesn't show all, but like I was clocking things that I was like, I wonder if they'll have this, and they would have this very obscure 90s movie or that. And then over the top of that, you know, you're watching clips, over the top of that is just Maya Hawke narrating a thesis on what happened and how VHS is, you know, changed culture and what happened and when they're going in and out. And then this all, and it wasn't Alex's writing, I guess, at the end. It turns out it was based on some essay that somebody had written. But it's pretty remarkable. And you'll know if this is for you or not. I didn't watch it in one sitting, but I really enjoyed watching it because I w spent, you know, at least 4 years working in a vi video stores. Some of my best memories existed in video stores, going in them, perusing them on dates. And so it just was a world watching it through these movie clips where I'm like, yep, this is so great. The only
Aww.
thing, weirdly enough, I didn't like, and it's not her fault, it was a little weird. Like, I get that it was Maya Hawke because Stranger Things, she is in the video store in Stranger Things. And so I get it, and it will appeal to younger people. But everything she's talking about is stuff that didn't exist in her lifetime. And so I felt, for me, that felt a little removed. And I think if he had just narrated it himself, and knowing this, Alex Ross Perry is also famous for being a big part of Kim's Video. He's the one who brought it back and helped bring all their videos back. He cataloged all their videos. He used to work there for like a decade or something. So he is the right person for this completely. But you know, that was the only thing that felt a little slight having her, because it felt a bit more like a gimmick or something. But it didn't. It's not bad. It just didn't necessarily work for me with what was being said. There's things that are being said that I'm like, have you even seen that? Because it was pretty obscure, you know. But whatever. That's a minor. Again, this is not for everyone. This is definitely one of those things that you could turn on, watch 30 minutes tonight, and you would be like, oh, I'll watch it in little chunks, you know. But there's so it brings back so many different things, and there's a few I hadn't seen. I wrote down like two or three movies where it's like, oh, that's mostly American. They don't go too much into foreign stuff that also would have had some shots in video stores, but it really talks about it as the center of culture and then the death of culture, and it's just really an interesting way to view this period. And obviously horror is a big part of it, so it's things like
Oh,
a lot of Toxic Avenger Part 3, they go deep on how that was in the video store. There's Nothing Out There. Movies like that, they definitely go deeper on. I have a rec from later in the show that is in the film extensively that I'll bring up in a bit. But anyway, I really dug it. That's called Video Heaven, and I think it's really cool that he just sat down and did it. It's almost like video art, you know, to
yeah.
stitch all that together. So we'll have this document to be like, oh, I wonder if where you could see all the clips from all the different movies that took place in video stores. There it is, right there, Video Heaven.
Oh my gosh, I miss and we a couple of weeks ago I'd gone to a friend's birthday party that is at Slasher World, the new place that opened up on Melrose, and they actually moved the Slashback video to the back of the store so you can walk through again. And it was still just even walking through it at a birthday party, it was still just such an amazing experience because you walk through and you're staring at movies that you've never seen before, and immediately I'm snapping pictures of them on my phone. And again, it takes me back to, and I've mentioned this on the show before, that that was such a crucial part of dating somebody for me as a teenager and even into like early years of college, because you would go to the video store together and then you would sit there and talk about movies while you slowly peruse aisles. And if you couldn't agree on a movie or a taste of movies, then you weren't going to cut another date. And it was so crucial. And yeah, I just. It connected me with people and I miss it dreadfully. And I worked at a video store as well. I spent most of my time working at a movie theater, but yeah, I was at a video store as well. So, oh gosh.
Well, the
Okay.
video store is like conversations too, because you're hanging out. Like I worked at movie theaters too, like, and I liked that. But video stores, it's in a movie theater, you're not that important. I always think like in terms about the movies, right? Like
Oh
I'm
yeah.
talking about a video store where it's like it makes sense that Tarantino came from a video store, right? It's like you become the center point in this very small world for your opinions. Basically, it's what podcasting is now. You know,
Yeah.
being a video store rental clerk, especially a smart ass one, is just now you get a podcast and you're doing the same thing to a different level of people, but
Yep.
without some of the attitude. But it charts all of that. It charts when the high point of video store people to the low point where they're becoming sarcastic, like clerks, where they're just basically being cruel to the people coming in to rent and stuff like that. So really fascinating that he got that made, and more power to him. So
Oh my gosh.
look
And
out for that.
Kim's, when I first moved to New York City in like 2005, Kim's was just the beacon of everything. It's where I wanted, and this is when they still had like three floors and they were
I
on
remember, yeah, they're
just off
huge.
Astor Place.
There's two of them.
And
There's a big one, and then there's a smaller one somewhere else
yep.
in New York, yeah.
Yeah, the smaller one was over like West Village, but yeah, I would take the subway over to the one that was right off Astor Place, and it was just beautiful, and you could spend just hours in there, and it was just all rentals. And I did not live anywhere near there. I was on the upper east side at the time, up near like Spanish Harlem, and I would still take the train down just to go to Kim's so I could rent stuff. So yeah, I deeply miss that so much,
Because
but
they're closer to like also art galleries. Like when you go into the MoMA and you're looking around, like in a good way, that's what there was an element of that to a video store. Like you were looking at the art, you're really taking it in. You're standing there for long periods of time reading things. It's just there's nothing. There's no equivalent. There's nothing
You
even
know,
close to that feeling now.
I've discovered, I did notice today, and this is in prep for what we're doing during kind of our discussion point of the show, that like today, you know, I'm going through Tubi and I'm seeing what's available and I'm like, huh, I've never seen that one before, added to the list. So I'm still doing that same kind of like perusing a large supply of movies and seeing what I've never seen before and then logging them, but it's not as tactile as having it there and being able to pick up the VHS tape. Like doing it here at my desk in my pajamas has lost something for me, but
Yeah, and
that
doing it
might
in a
just.
physical space, I think is the thing I miss, because I like Letterboxd as well for list making and looking at covers and posters or whatever. But it's there's something about the space. And the last thing I just want to bring up is I'm not allowed to talk about it because it's under embargo. But I did watch a Yeti film starring Jim Cummings, just so people
Wow,
understand
okay.
that that exists, because I did not know that existed until I watched it. It is still under embargo for another couple weeks, but it exists, a Yeti film. He's not the lead, he's one of the actors in it, but a Yeti film. And that made me also remember that I have to remind you especially, but everyone else, because I watched it at Screamfest, and then it snuck up on me that it's even out. But literally the best film, I think, of the year so far is this movie. Also, Jim has a small role in, called Redux Redux, which is a Terminator-like time travel genre film by the Block Island Sound directors, the brothers.
I loved Block Island
Dude,
Sound.
this
Okay.
movie is such a massive leap. This is from Blue Ruin to Green Room leap, in my opinion.
Wow. Okay.
And no one's talking about this movie right now. And I feel bad because I talked about it so long ago when I saw it in October, and it's just coming out this month. I thought this was going to be a massive, massive, massive like indie hit this year, and it seems to be pretty quiet at the moment. So I want to put it on. I'll just give you the very basic hook again. It is a woman is traveling through time, repeatedly brutally murdering the killer of her daughter. So there's this piece of shit who works at a diner. She follows him home, and the first thing, you have no idea what's going on. He walks into his house. He looks at her. He doesn't know who she is, and she just brutally kills him. And you're like, whoa, what is this? And then she does it again, each time in a different parallel dimension. So it's not time travel. They're different parallel dimensions. But each time he's slightly different, but it's still him, and he still has murdered her daughter in each one of them. She can't go back in time and stop it from happening. She just keeps ragefully murdering. She has built this device, you'll see. And it's done in this lo-fi way that reminded me a bit more of the original Terminator. It's muscular, it feels big, and it just, she basically, with each time, she's like losing a bit more of her humanity with each, and she kind of starts to know it. And then something happens. She meets this young girl who she can save. She can't save her daughter, but she can save this other girl from him, and then they get lost going through dimensions. It is like, I just couldn't, like, me and Star went to it at that festival, and I was like, damn, how do they get this thing made? Because it's just like hitting all those indie things, but making it feel like a $5 million movie. Really impressive. And that's called Redux Redux. If you can see it, see this movie. It's an absolute banger, in my opinion.
I will quickly plug the book, and I'll say this is more of like a novella. I read the entire thing in 2 nights, which was a blast, called Abyss by Nicholas Binge. And I had read Nicholas's prior book while I was actually filming because it's called Ascension and it's set in the snow. It's about this mountain that kind of appears in the middle of nowhere and these people climbing it to see what's up at the top of it. And it's like super set in the snow. And so I had read that while I was shooting and really, really enjoyed it. And so going into this one, I was excited to see what he does next. This one is more like a novella where I read it in 2 nights, and it's basically Severance mixed with Lovecraft, which sounds like everything that I would love in the world. Because it is so short, there's never really a question about what's happening. It is about a guy named Joe who spends most of his days just playing on Instagram and getting lost on TikTok, but he really has to have a job. So he starts at this company. He does his interview online. He's completely hired online. He arrives at the company and it's this big office building and everything's automated. And the computer tells him to head up to the fourth floor. That's where he's going to be working. They direct him to an office. He sees no one on the way there. And he finds out that most people work from home the majority of the time. He goes in, he sits down at a computer. The computer trains him. The computer checks in to make sure that he's emotionally feeling good. It feels very kind of contemporary to make sure that he's having good mental days and things like that. But it very much quickly starts escalating into something is wrong with this company. And the other very few employees that he starts meeting in the office are very unhinged. And eventually he goes down to the basement to try to find out what's going on. It's clearly a big allegory for capitalism and the idea of kind of having to be, and I think that this is actually on the cover somewhere, a wage slave. The idea of I hate what I'm doing, but I have to do this to pay bills and kind of losing your soul to work, but through Lovecraftian cosmic gods. So yeah, it was not perfect. But it still was, I was still excited to read it over the course of 2 nights. So it's very Severance with giant Lovecraftian gods at the end. So that was The Abyss. It comes
Nice.
out, I think this one's late May. This one's coming out. So yeah, definitely if you're a Lovecraft fan, you'll love this. This was very, very Lovecraftian.
Which takes us to our, usually we'd do a history fact, did you know, where we would tell you, see if each other knew, but you stumbled upon a doc and we decided we'll just do a co-sponsor of this one documentary because neither of us knew and now we both know, and it was very interesting.
Yeah, so I discovered this new documentary that had just started streaming on Shudder called The Last Sacrifice. And I start watching it, and it was just kind of a blind click for me because the cover looked kind of cool. I didn't even at the time realize that it was a documentary. It just looked like really badass faux car. And I click on it, and within the first 10 minutes, you basically find out that The Wicker Man is based on a real life murder that happened in England back in the 19 when was it? It was like the when did the actual murder happen? I can't even remember. But that it's The Wicker Man is based on this real life murder that took place. And that over the course of time, it's considered to be that murder is the foundation of folk horror. So it basically tracks how this murder happens and then all of these folk horrors spin out of it. 1945. And the guy's name was Charles Walton. real life murder in this tiny, tiny, tiny little town of just a couple hundred people. And one day, everybody's like, where is he? And he is found in a field with like a pitchfork through his head and a scythe through his chest. And then supposedly there were conflicting reports that the sign of the cross had been drawn on him in blood. And so it's got this real kind of folk killing feel to it. But where it gets most like The Wicker Man, and you can see that The Wicker Man directly pulled from it, is that because it was in this tiny little town and this was a brutal murder, they send in this like hotshot cop who's really religious and goes in and is like, I'm going to solve this. I'm going to figure out what happens. And basically everybody in town is like, yeah, we don't want to talk to you. And so as he's going around and is like, yeah, we need to talk about the brutal murder, everybody in town is like, yeah, that's something, isn't it? Let's just let it go. And so it really has this feel of like a bigger conspiracy within the town. And that true story, which this documentary is about, it becomes the basis not only for Wicker Man, but a ton of British folk horror to come.
A lot of the satanic panic stuff in England, the English kind of version of that. No, I just had lots of, and it goes on lots of tangents. Maybe it weakens the movie a bit by the end, but I kind of liked that it takes all these tangents about other possible scenarios because, like, the cop who goes there is also known as this hotshot, genius crime. And so maybe he's just upping the story to make it sound like he's more clever than he was. And he has a TV show later where he uncovers, from Scotland Yard or something, uncovers true crimes and stuff. And then you also have the fact that it could be local Satanist group, it could be just somebody mad. Then there's also a theory that the actual guy who was murdered was the main Satanist in the town. So there's all these different kind of possibilities. You won't necessarily land on one fact-based thing, but I thought it was very interesting. And what they didn't get to connect it to at the end, but I thought it was very interesting to think about is when we talk about folk horror, the two new 28 days, 28 months or whatever movies, there also is a slight connection to that involving the Teletubbies. And that's all else where Teletubbies connects both this documentary and those movies in a very strange way, where you're like, oh, weird that Teletubbies have anything to do with British folk horror, but it does. Anyway, I thought it was very interesting. So this was it was a, I think it's a really good one to just watch. I think it's on Shudder, and just a fun kind of precursor to a lot of the movies we love, Kill List and things like that.
Oh yeah. And what's fascinating as I'm like, because immediately as I'm watching the documentary, I'm Googling because I'm like, how have I never heard of this? And every site, every newspaper, everything that I'm looking at just says, oh yeah, he was killed by witchcraft. Like they're all just kind of
Right, yeah, that
accepting that,
accepted,
like,
yeah.
that the town was very much still rooted in paganistic beliefs, that it was this setback town in Warwickshire, England called Lower Quinton. And that it was just this tiny little town that still very much adhered to old school paganistic beliefs. And so, in every single report that I'm finding, it's all just like, oh no, he was a victim of witchcraft. And so, it's just such a wild story to look at.
And the
And
stuff
the.
with the black dog is really interesting. They keep bringing up the sighting, just a lot of myths and lore that come from this one particular murder that we didn't realize. Another movie, what's that? The other Edward Woodward one that I always recommend to people, that weird 60-minute kind of TV movie one with his daughter, and he has the dream premonition, the appointment.
Oh,
I've been
yeah.
recommending for that for the last couple of years, but that also has a lot of vibes because that has a black dog that walks into the house when he's asleep. And so I wonder if that elements of that movie were also being pulled from this original story. So it definitely has its fingers deeply into all British folk horror, and most British horror is folk horror. I mean, that's the thing. That's the main, I'd say, export of British horror, is folk tales. So, and ghost and some of the ghost stories. Very interesting. I was glad you turned me onto it. I thought it was a good watch.
Yeah, so this one was on Shudder, and it was just amazing to kind of see this real life crime, because it does mix kind of, true crime with kind of the medias that it spawned. So yeah, this is a good one. The Last Sacrifice, currently on Shudder.
And that goes with it. We thought because we'd been gone for a while, we would just have a us episode, no interview. And we thought for kind of our topic, we were just going to recommend three different things that are streaming each. I have to start not one of my actual picks, but reminding you to watch Match on Tubi, because
Oh, that's Stanishka's one.
I just
I
still
have it on
think
the list. Yeah.
it's like it was made for you. I just really do. I think you will find it very entertaining.
They just announced a new film that she's doing for Tubi, and they just announced it today, and I cannot remember what it is, and now I have to look it up. But whatever it was based on Match that she was able to get this new one.
Yeah, lower budget Barbarian is what it's called, but it has its own charm. Anyway, yeah, so we're just gonna pick three. I picked three different streaming things just so I wouldn't pick them all from the same one, but
Same.
we don't have to go deep on these. It's just more like, what are some fun recs?
Yeah. I'm going to kick us off here with Tubi, where I found Dead and Buried from 1981.
Big fan.
And I wanted to mention this because this is one that I feel like a lot of younger horror fans have not yet seen. Like, you go back, you watch the classics. But this one I feel like gets overlooked by a lot of contemporary horror audiences because it's one that whenever I mention it to my students are like, huh? Like, they've never even heard of it. This is Gary Sherman. For those of us who are older horror fans,
Ba-dum
you
boom.
probably
Remember that?
saw, yeah.
Ba-dum boom. This is the most inside joke if you've ever been around Gary Sherman in your life when he did pods with us. For some reason, he'd be talking and he'd be, and then this happened, and then in the
And
ba-dum
then
boom. Ba-dum
bum
boom. And it
bum
happened like 10 times. I was like, wow, that's a really interesting way to
It
talk.
was how he transversed time. Like, instead of saying and then the next thing you know, but he would
Ba-dum boom.
make bum bum bum.
Ba-dum boom.
I love Gary
Yeah,
Sherman.
no, he's really cool. I got to have dinner with him last year, and it was really fun talking movie. He's just a really cool guy.
He's just a cool guy. So, 1981, this is one of his early films, Dead and Buried, set in the town of Potter's Bluff, which is definitely kind of a New England-y burg. And our protagonist is the sheriff of the town, who all of a sudden, all of these tourists are being murdered. And then their corpses are coming back to life. And the townsfolk, they never, you know, there's never any secret. It's the townsfolk that are doing the murders. And so he is investigating, but at the same time, we as the audience are seeing the murders take place. So we're waiting for the sheriff to catch up with it. And then he's got this like super hot wife who keeps talking about witchcraft. And it's basically the sheriff trying to figure out what on earth is going on in this town, as it seems to just be absolute lunacy the entire time. It's a treat. It is an absolute treat. It definitely got a reputation for being a zombie film, which it is not. And I think that the cover did that. Like, the cover definitely kind of feels more zombie-ish, but it is not in any
Oh, it's got
capacity.
some surprises. Yeah, it's got some nice twists of what kind of movie it even is.
Oh yeah, this is so many subgenres all
Yeah.
in one. Screenplay was Dan O'Bannon and Ronald Shusett,
Big
sorry.
fan, yeah.
So some horror legacy there.
Return of the Living Dead, yeah.
Originally classified as a video nasty, and that was later rescinded, but yeah, it definitely had enough moments that it got classified as a video nasty. And Stan Winston does some of the special effects in it, which
Effects
is
are
great.
great, and when the twist is revealed at the end, there's some amazing effects. Most importantly, the history of this movie is that without this movie, Wings Hauser would not be in Vice Squad, and that's what matters because Wings wasn't in this movie, but he was dating the actress in this movie, so he was showing up to set when he wasn't on Young and the Restless, and he was just playing guitars and drinking, and Gary Sherman started talking to him and was like, "Man, this guy's kind of intense," and then cast him the next year in Vice Squad. So this movie matters for that reason. The greatest movie of all, Neon Slime, baby. I love that. I agree. That's probably under gets under. I don't see it ever screened. I never see it like
No.
never projected somewhere. I'd love to see this
It
movie on
never
screen.
gets a retrospective screening. And it just, I feel like when I saw it on Tubi, I was immediately like, this just does not get the love that I feel like Dead and Buried deserves. It deserves to be in kind of a historical horror canon. And it's doing something so different that I have never seen since.
Yeah, no, it's really, and it's Seaside Horror, which we both, that's one of our dual obsessions, Seaside Horror. So my one is also from Tubi, the first one I did, and I've been doing a bit of work for a different pod that will be out soon on a lot of psychotronic movies from various guides that I love, one of my favorite books of all time. And one of the movies that I discovered from there, from an old interview that the guy who wrote those books and magazines, he re had recommended it back in the day, called The Hypnotic Eye, which I had done for our deep cuts years and years ago. And it's from 1950, 1960 rather, George Blair. It's so good and so weird. It looks like a Sam Fuller movie, like it has that vibe, like somebody investigating crimes, and it's almost got a from 1960 in black and white. But it is there's a bizarre wave of self-mutilations by housewives. Beautiful blonde housewives are basically, it opens with one of the most messed up scenes I've ever seen. She's just watching TV and then she walks in to like do the dishes or something, and she thinks she's just doing the dishes, and then you realize she's actually lighting her whole face on fire on the stove, but she's not feeling anything. So the flames, but her whole face, and it's crazy. It's like, whoa. And the effects are actually really good. And multiple people are doing this, and they start investigating it, and they start to realize that this charismatic, very famous stage hypnotist might be to blame, because the people have been going to a show, and then a week later carrying out these crazy things. So it's like a detective trying to figure out, and a woman who might be the next victim. And at some point, it has this crazy thing where it's like back in the 60s, like gimmick, where it's like a William Castle vibe to the audience. And I had to look it up, like, what is this? And they said the new audience participation thrill, hypnomagic. So that's what they're advertising it as, hypnomagic. It makes you part of the show from the original print ad. So I'm into hypnomagic. Anyway, this is a real gem, one of those 75-minute gems in black and white that's just a little more fucked up than it should be.
This movie is so fucked up. I remember
Yeah, it's
watching this thinking it
crazy.
was going to be kind of stodgy. And then as soon as you see her like slicing her face off, you're like, oh my God.
Yeah, no, it kind of goes there from the set. So definitely one of my favorite wrecks of that type of movie. So yeah, want to make sure any, and as you say, an older film, so people might not have seen that one on Tubi. So there's a couple Tubis for you. What's your next streaming place?
Okay, next, I am going to take us over to Pluto TV, which I do not spend a lot of time on Pluto, but I had Vinegar Syndrome just recently came out with an ultra 4K HD of the film Ruby. Do you remember this one?
I've never
You
seen
really
yeah I've never
you liked
seen it.
this one, I
This is
thought.
no this is Curtis Harrington. I still haven't seen it. A friend of mine recommended it to me too. I've almost watched it multiple times and just haven't watched Ruby. Like, I know it's set in the
Oh my
period,
gosh. Yeah.
unless I'm wrong and did eventually watch it, but I don't think I did. I'll look on that.
Okay. This is from 1977. This is Curtis Harrington, who did Night Tide, which is one of Elric's favorite movies. Like, literally, there's a
Poster by me.
poster behind you right now, and The Killing Kind. And this was definitely something that feels a lot different than his other two movies. You can tell that this is them saying, like, hey, possession films are really huge right now because of The Exorcist. Let's make one of those. But still, there's something good about this movie that I deeply enjoy. In 1930s Florida, we're back to Florida.
Hey.
There is a mobster who's gunned down by his own gang in front of his wife at the time, who is also carrying his daughter. And it's his gang that kills him. They decide that he's too out of control, so they gun him down. And then that was in the 1930s. We now flash forward 2 decades later, so now we're in the 1950s, and his wife at the time, Ruby, who was like a showgirl back in the 1930s, is now a quiet, she is owns a, what would you call it, like a drive-in and a restaurant next door, and the gang still works there. So the entire gang still works at this drive-in that she now runs, and their daughter, who she eventually gave birth to, is now 16 and lives in this giant house that's like next to the drive-in. She also works alongside Nikki's old gang members. And one by one, all of the former gang members start dying in these really, really bizarre and gruesome ways. And then, in a total like exorcist way, they bring in a parapsychologist to try to figure out what's happening and why all of these things are happening. And they figure out that basically he's possessing his own teenage daughter. And this sounds really, really campy, but somehow it's well done and a lot of fun, I gotta say, because it's bringing in these like 1930s gangsters, but it's set in the 1950s, but it's being made via the 1970s. There's something a lot of fun in this movie. Vinegar Syndrome just did the Ultra 4K HD, but it's currently screaming on Pluto TV as well. So I wanted to give a strong recommendation. Because this is such a deep cut and even crazier. It's got crazy kills. It's super gory. Piper Laurie plays Ruby, which makes it
Wow.
even
Yeah.
better.
Yeah, no, it's like, I think I've watched the first 5 minutes, and maybe the copy wasn't great, so I was like, I'll wait. But I just looked at my thing and I haven't seen it yet, so now I definitely need to.
Yeah, this one, it's fun. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, and speaking of, like, when I was talking about Andy Milligan, like, similar, Curtis Harrington's not got the reputation of being, he's got a reputation being a lovely, lovely guy, but similar kind of filmmaker, making very, like, unique handmade stuff, you know, and they're mostly on their own. That one, he obviously had a little bit more money for that one, but okay, my next one is a Shudder one. It's one that you talked about not too long ago on our deep cuts, but it's one that always stays with me, and I still feel like no one, you know, not enough people have seen it. But I think the perfect time to watch this before, in a couple weeks, Faces of Death, the remake, will be coming out. So I wanted to recommend Thesis by
Oh, good
Amenábar. Yeah,
one.
this is on Shudder right now, so you never know when, because this was real quite hard to see when I saw it. Like, I remember it took me quite a while to find a way to see this when I had first tracked it down, probably in the end of the 90s. It came out in 96 or early 2000s, when this is a, you know, a director who's gone on to be a major director of The Others, and the one where Nick, the film I just forgot, the one where Tom Cruise remade it, Vanilla Sky, but whatever, the original version of that, and with Penelope Cruz. And this is about a girl doing a thesis about violence and movies at her university and in her film department. And then she stumbles upon the snuff video, and through research starts to, you know, they're trying to figure out if it's real or not. And she starts to r ends up realizing that it's actually somebody from her who used to be in her department. And then there's like really interesting some red herrings. There's a guy who works at a video store who's helping her decode things, and it has all the hallmarks of a kind of cheesy, fun, jokey American 90s movie, but it is not treated in that tone at
It
all.
is deadly
Yeah, it's deadly
serious.
serious. And so for me, I really appreciate that, because it's a different, it would have just been like a kind of a funny, silly slasher here. But the coolest thing about it is the young student, the woman, is played by Anna Torrent, and for me, I hadn't seen her since she was the little girl in Spirit of the Beehive, to me, one of the most famous Spanish films of all time. And so it's cool that that's her. And you, as soon as you see her eyes, you're like, oh, wow, that's that girl. It's just a really cool movie. It's not perfect. It's his first feature, but it's got a lot of weird things in it, and it does push the kind of dread and violence pretty hard. So I just thought it definitely ties in nicely with Faces of Death.
Oh,
So
yeah.
I thought, yeah, people should watch this one first. It's Spanish language, but on Shudder.
Okay, so I wanted to do one contemporary one. I wanted to find one movie that we had talked about recently that I was suddenly like, hey, and this is streaming here. So I decided to go with the one that we had. Oh shit, I didn't even write down the title. Now I have to go back and find it. Hold on, Ernie, cut this.
Keep it
One
so people
sec.
understand what I'm working with. It's like you're bouncing a ball against a wall, but there's no wall. I just hit the ball and it goes off into infinity black space. To it never ends until it comes
My
back and hits me in the back of the
God.
head.
You stop. Okay, got it. Strange Harvest. I was about to say Strange Occult, and that's not it. Okay. I'm going to start that whole segment over so it's clean for you.
Keep it, Ernie.
I wanted to do one that was more contemporary. I wanted to do one title that we could be like, hey, here's this thing that we talked about last year and thought was awesome. And if you forgot about it, here is where it's streaming now. So I opted for Strange Harvest because this is one of my
Oh,
top
yeah.
films from 2024. And this is the one, it's found footage, and it's found footage, but more of kind of a faux documentary style, where it feels like a true crime doc about this serial killer who has kind of a way of coming back every couple of years. And all of the crimes are really grotesque and weird. Like he drains an entire family of blood all at once and then puts their blood on the kitchen sink. And it's just like all of these crazy things of how did he do this? So they always have this kind of supernatural quality to the killings, but he seems to come back every couple of years. And so it's interviewing cops who are investigating the different crimes, and it's looking at the different crimes that have occurred over time. This one is currently streaming on Hulu. And so I was elated to see that because this is one that I had seen at a festival. And I always love it when they kind of sneak onto a streaming platform and then I can be like, oh shit, it's here now. So the serial killer was named Mr. Shiny in it. So you can now see Mr. Shiny on Hulu. And I really enjoyed this one because it is that mix of found footage, mockumentary, not mock, I'll call it like faux documentary because it's in no way funny, but still really horrifying at the same time. This one actually had some really unnerving stuff to it that I feel like it's hard to maintain if you're doing kind of a horror faux documentary. Like it's hard to still have those scares in there, but this one did. So this is Strange Harvest from 2024, which is now over at Hulu.
And that's one of the directors of it, Grave Encounters. I think two of them split, and that's his film.
Yeah.
And it kind of
Spirit
goes, co
Ortiz.
yeah, and goes kind of cosmic horror even by the end, which is
It
interesting.
does.
No, it's, I like that one too. The last one I ties into when I was talking about Video Heaven. Video Heaven on, I mean, the streaming service that's doing the best curation period, and I watch the least. And I don't, it's because it's not on my TV. I'm a member, but I can only watch it on my computer because it doesn't, for whatever reason, the app doesn't go on my TV. And that's the Criterion Channel. And they just do some, every month, they are doing some program where I'm like, damn, that's great programming, but I hardly ever watch it. Anyway, they are, for Video Heaven, which they are obviously premiering that documentary I was talking about, they have a section which has like all, they have Videodrome, Lost Highway, The Ring, both versions of The Ring, like all these movies in this, and not just horror movies, Speaking Parts, Benny's Video, Watermelon Woman, Clerks, like all of these movies in one place, which is so cool. And it's a really good way to platform that movie. But one of the
You
movies,
watching Benny's movie over and over, just repetition.
I have seen Benny's Video twice, but in my life, the first time was interesting. The second time, I think I was doing it for a show. But yeah, it goes pretty hard, Benny's Video.
That's one of those I think
Michael
you only have
Haneke's,
to see once. Yeah, that's like
yes.
one of Michael Haneke's. I guess that's probably like his
I think
first
that's his
film.
first feature, and it's definitely one of his hard. I mean, all
It's the
his films
most
feel hard.
extreme.
Yeah,
Yeah.
it's pretty, but it's really smart. Actually, that would play very well with as a double feature with Thesis. You know, they
Yeah.
have
Oh,
a lot in
actually, it
common.
would. And Faces of Death, too. It definitely has that feel to it. So,
So, some
really
cool
quick before
facts.
you get to your rec, I will say I have an Amazon TV, with the Fire TV, and mine, the Criterion channel's on an app. And it doesn't populate on like my Amazon the way that a lot of them do, but I can go directly to the app on the television.
See,
So
for
you should
whatever
try
reason,
it.
mine's an LG and it doesn't yet. And I've had it for a couple of years and it's just a bummer because I think I would watch quite a lot on there because I'm always just blown away with what they choose to program. And again, one of the ones when I'm watching this video again, when I was watching the Video Heaven, the one film that popped on suddenly that I had kind of forgotten, and this will bring back memories for you too, is another friend, just like you talked about Gary Sherman, our old buddy Jeff Lieberman's crazy. Yeah,
Oh.
his wackiest movie, and one of his later ones, Remote Control, definitely
Oh
one
my
of his best I've
gosh,
seen. Yeah, it
yeah.
was hard to get. You had to buy it directly from him.
I have a bootleg copy of it.
Yeah, he sells a Blu-ray, but it was like through him. There was no actual place to get it for a long time. And this, the clips in the documentary were so great that I was like, shit, I gotta rewatch this again. This is a 1988 Kevin Dillon working in a video store movie. It's got a lot in common with They Live, a lot, that kind of tone of him discovering through a videotape an alien conspiracy at the store that only him and another video store person, also Jennifer Tilly, is in there. These the film the sci-fi film B movie is being used to brainwash viewers into killing each other, and he needs to find a way to stop that for or these people take it. So it's got the kind of goofy qualities of those kind of movies, but I love Blue Sunshine, Just Before Dawn, and so I think Lieberman's always fun. Squirm. He's always fun. And this, I still think, is his least known because Satan's Little Helper has grown in the last few years. And
It
a lot of,
has.
I feel like a lot of people have found that because of the Halloween connection. But I feel like Remote Control is still very under the radar. And I think people could have a bit of fun there.
You know, when oh gosh, I was probably in college. I remember that I had almost watched this and I had asked somebody what it was about. And they told me that it was about a killer standee, like those old
Oh,
like standees that they used to put in VHS stores. And it clearly is not. And that person clearly did not know what they were talking about. This is while I was working at the video store. But to this day, I think about it. I'm like, why didn't anybody make a movie about a killer standee? Like, that just sounds so fun now. But this, I remember having fond memories of this.
Yeah, and Kevin Dillon's obviously having fun in this period. He's in The Blob and things like that a couple years before the season The Blob. So, but anyway, watching the clips in the movie, this is the movie I most wanted to rewatch as soon as it ended. And Toxic Avenger 3, somewhat, weirdly enough. But anyway, so yeah, so those are three recs each from some streaming. You could do worse than watching those six movies this week.
I still remember when we interviewed Jeff Lieberman, and I asked because I was like, there's so many worms at the end of Squirm, especially during like the electrocution scene. Those are fake worms, right? And he goes, no,
Yeah,
I
no.
have the weight of 10,000 earthworm souls on my
Yeah,
shoulders. And
no,
I
really.
was like, oh my God, sir. Yeah.
I had
He's
seen Squirm before we talked to him, and then after his stories, I watched it just like a couple years ago again, and it's just watching it again, knowing how they did that, it's like insane. That movie's got
Yeah.
some crazy scenes with so many worms. It's for a bug movie, it's one of my favorite of those because it's
Oh,
truly
yeah.
kind of unsettling. It's It's kind of gross, to be honest.
Oh, well, let's head into our recs, because mine is a book, but it's an older book that I really enjoyed. This was long. This took me a while to get through, and I was also listening to the audiobook simultaneously. But this had been recommended to by one of our listeners, had messaged me on Instagram and was like, "I really think you'll like this book." And it is true, I did. This is The Lost Village, which was 2018 Swedish thriller novel. I can't, it's horror, but yeah, they call it a thriller novel by Camilla Steen. And so Swedish, but it's been translated into English, and you can, like, it's on Spotify. Like, I listened to it on Spotify so I could bounce back and forth between the book and the audiobook while I was driving. And it is about a filmmaker, a young filmmaker, who decides that she wants to make a documentary about this Swedish town where in 1959 the entire town just suddenly disappeared. And the reason that she wants to make a story, a documentary about it, is that her grandmother was originally from there. But her grandmother had moved away a couple of years prior and was living in Stockholm. And so the rest of her family was there and disappeared without a trace one day in 1959. And so she gathers up a group of documentary friends. There's probably like six of them. And they gather up a bunch of film equipment in a couple vans and head off to this town that nobody has populated since the 1960s. And or 1959. And the cops had already been through it a number of times, and researchers had gone in, you know, was it like a gas leak or some type of like plague that wiped everybody out all at once? And nobody was ever able to answer it. And it's literally like there's coffee being poured with coffee mugs on the counter with half the coffee in it and plates that still have food on it. Like everything is as if everybody in the town just suddenly disappeared one day in 1959. And so she and the crew go there to start investigating and going kind of building by building to see what they can find. This was fun. I had a blast with the mystery along the way, with what they're uncovering. The ending was okay for me. Kind of the big reveal was great. It ends a little kind of, you know, I wanted something bigger, but that said, this was a fantastic trip along the way. You know, it reminded me, remember that bloody disgusting movie that came out probably a decade ago called Yellow Brick Road?
Oh yeah,
It has
that was their
those
first
notes
one.
to it. That was one of their very first ones. And that movie was about basically a group of people who saw The Wizard of Oz and then just start walking into the woods and disappear. It had that same note to it. And I just love those stories to begin with. Like, because there are the real life stories of, you know, the town of Roanoke, where all these people were there, and then they, you know, completely disappear off the face of the earth. And then it's always a logical solution. This is that if there is no logical solution of like what happened to a couple hundred people on one day in 1959. So this was a blast. The Lost Village by Camilla Stein, Steen, Steen. And again, I checked the book out of the library and then found that it was also completely available on Spotify. So listened to it while I was also reading it so I could move more quickly.
Nice. I just finished reading a book, a very short, almost novella, like a 200-page one, last week called Dead End Tunnel by Nick Roberts. Came out, I
Dead
guess, last
End
year.
Tunnel.
Dead End Tunnel, yeah. It came out last year, I guess. I didn't realize it was that new, kind of self-publishy, or not self-published, but a smaller publisher. And it's a cool book. Like, it's somewhere between Mike Flanagan's Absentia mixed with a bit of Salem's Lot kind of vibe, not vampires in this case. So it's basically this guy recalling his childhood trauma when he was turning 15 in 1999. Him and two friends snuck out on his birthday to ride their new bikes through this old tunnel that has like one-way traffic, and it's quite dangerous to do it. And they do it, and then when they get to the other side, only two of them emerge, and one of them has disappeared. And when they get home, they just got these new walkie-talkies. They hear his voice in the walkie-talkies asking for help. He's lost in some other kind of realm through the tunnel. And they as they get parents involved to try to help, there's something being kept from them, some kind of secret about it. And before you know it, the next day, their friend returns to them, trying to get convince them to come into the tunnel with him, that there's these rules that if he can bring one of them back, you know, he'll be fine. And you realize it's, in fact, it's the sinister, malevolent thing taking the form of their friend. And then slowly more people are getting sucked into it in their family and friends, and it's going basically complete chaos by the end of them trying to get through. And then it's being told through then the present story of him returning to this town, 20 years later to kind of end it all, put an end to whatever that the dark power of this tunnel. But it has some really fun, goopy, horror, crazy kind of moments. I'd say as literature, it's just okay. But as a story, it's really good. Like, it's less the way it's being told than the kind of story. You can see it. You could imagine it as a film very easily. A bit of It in there as well.
I was going to say,
It's
this
fun.
sounds super Stephen Kingsy.
Yeah, it is a little bit like that too. It's but I probably a little bit more of Flanagan's absentia, but Flanagan's very Kingsy, so what are you gonna do? It was a good quick read. It was like a two session read for me, which was nice. I always like those short ones between longer things. And it was one I had gone on to. It worked out. I'd recommend this if you're like me and you go into a period where you like I read Sour Candy and really like that. I was looking up novellas on Reddit. Horror novellas, and there were some great recs on there where I must have written down 10 or 12 things, and I've read most of them by now. But it was a good way to find stuff that I just don't know where to start with that kind of stuff. So, yeah, always thank you to the weirdos on Reddit. Let's go.
There was a horror bookstore that I found when I was in Winnipeg, and it is just horror books called Raven's End Books, and it was great, great shop. And while I was in there, I asked the clerk, again, this goes back to like being the expert nerd who gets to run things like the comic book expert, or this is a tiny little horror bookshop. And I said, I need some novellas. And she literally like walked me through like five of them. So I left with a stack of novellas. The next one I have up is called Coupe de Grace, which is apparently about like variations of hell, but I'm super excited to read that. I love novellas because it is that quick dive. You know, Lost Village was great, but it definitely took me 3 weeks to get through that. And that's like listening to it for like an hour a day on my drive. So
Yeah,
yeah,
that
there's
was me with
something.
Coco. Coco was a long one, but really good. If people haven't read that one, I would definitely also recommend that one again. That was a great read.
You know, I have to end with this because I had said this on the show last week, and then Daniel Kraus messaged me, and I was like, oh my God. So we have found one of those wormholes where like the alternate history exists. I can't even remember the name of it now, where he also remembers Coco being a horror book about a monkey. And so it's one of those like Berenstain Bears, like alternate reality things where there's apparently a group of people from our generation who remembers Coco being about a horror book about a killer gorilla. And we apparently made the entire thing up, but we did so collectively, which is pretty cool.
Well, and I think there's some ways to understand that, like the Coco being a very famous gorilla from that period, and also the cover being black with weird, like the main cover is kind of an ambiguous kind of lips and things. So it'd be easy to have that memory with that cover and somehow misremember it, you know?
Mandela effect,
Yeah,
that's the
yeah,
word I
yeah,
was looking
yeah.
for. But what's weird, I was telling Daniel this, I so the cover of Coco is like a guy's lips and eyes, and it's very distinct because it's all black with the outline of the facial features in green and black. I distinctly remember the book Coco having a gorilla's hand in that same art style in that green outline and blood dripping off one of the fingers. And so it was still the same green and red effect. There's still the same green and red art, but I remember it being a bloody gorilla's hand. And so when I looked at it while we were doing the show, I was like, oh, that's not the same book. I remember the gorilla's hand. And no, that does not exist anywhere. It's like my brain made up this whole book about a killer gorilla and even fictionalized the book cover. It's so
Well,
fucking weird.
thanks to AI and us having fans, somebody please make Becca the correct cover. Try to stick as close as you can to the color scheme of the correct Coco
Of Coco,
and give her a
but it's a
monkey
gorilla's
hand. Yeah.
hand, and there's blood dripping off the index finger. And that is the book cover I saw when I was a kid. I swear by it. It was called Coco. And I'm not the only one who had this memory as well. Thank you, Daniel Kraus, for affirming my weird mental blockage
That
there.
said, Babar the elephant stories do get mentioned a lot in Coco, and that's as close as it gets to animals.
Are you
But
serious?
yeah, that's a big part of the story, weirdly enough. That lastly, before we go, I did want to say congrats again, nominated for Rondo Award, Best Podcast.
Two Rondo Awards
Yeah, I
this
missed
round.
that. That's ridiculous. But the second one, because I felt like we just went in there and rolled. But still.
We got nominated. So Best Podcast, which we deeply appreciate. Thank you guys for this. It means the world
I
to
think
us
that's been
every
every
single
year that
year.
we've potted, and
It
we only
has.
the only time when we've been runner up at least six or seven of those,
Yeah.
but we won only once in the second year of Killer POV, I believe, which was 3 shows ago.
The fact that we still get invited to the
Yeah,
table
it's
every
cool.
year just lights me up. But this year, we also got a second Rondo Award nomination for Best Commentary Track for Mouth of Madness, which we were shocked by. Like, Elric didn't even catch it at first. And then somebody texted me, congratulations. And I was like, for what? And they were like, the Mouth of Madness thing. And I was like, oh, shit. Because I didn't even think about it enough to look.
Because we
And,
definitely did it more of a fun, like just like a podcast, really. We didn't do it
Yeah,
as the
we ran
deep
it like a
dive
podcast.
history ones that a lot of people do. And those I do respect a lot because people put so much time into researching, like months. Whereas we were like, well, we love this movie. And we'll obviously we did some, but it was
Let's
definitely
talk about
chill.
how cool this shot is. Yeah, it was
Yeah,
very
it
off
was
the
low key.
cuff.
No, that was fun. I haven't
So
listened to it,
yes.
so I don't even didn't even get a copy, actually. I just realized.
Oh, but thank you guys so much for whoever nominated for us for that. And please vote. You can go to rondoawards.com and see the that you have to vote by email, but we are nominated in both categories. So yay, thank you
Yeah, that's fun.
guys.
Always fun,
Yeah.
and nice to know that at least somebody's listening. That's what
Yeah.
matters.
So we're hoping by next episode that we will have seen the new Faces of Death movie and
Yeah,
can
I hope
talk
we can
about
talk
it.
about it. Yeah, I'm looking forward to
I'm
it.
deeply intrigued because I gotta say, I was a fan of those movies when I was a kid because it was always that level of ambiguity of is it real or is it fake? And you could never tell. And it was very clear that some of the segments in Faces of Death were 100% faked. Like I remember one about a woman who went swimming near a power plant, a nuclear power plant. She had this like giant leech stuck to her chest, like clearly fake. But then there were other ones where you were like, this feels real. And you were watching real stuff mixed with fake stuff. And I'm intrigued to see how it feels to see something that is entirely faked. Does it still have that same quality? Which I don't think it will. Like watching those original ones, it felt like you were watching something forbidden, like you shouldn't have been watching it. And so I'm intrigued to see if they can preserve that.
Yeah, no, I obviously this will be a normal movie in quote marks, but probably finding a meta angle to incorporate it. So yeah, no, I'll be curious to see it for sure. And I like that director a lot, both
Oh,
directors
yeah. How to
wise.
Blow Up a Pipeline was epic. Cam was
Cam's really
amazing.
strong too, yeah.
Yeah.
So definitely interesting. So yeah, we'll be back in a couple weeks for that, and we'll have some deep cuts in between.
Yeah, so please check out our Patreon show, Deep Cuts. Lots of good stuff over there. And thank you all so much for listening.